Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 20 of Digging for the Truth with Ark and Neo. And tonight we're going to be talking with Chris Leslie of GreaterAncestors.com. And we had a really amazing talk with him tonight. I really apologize for the sound quality on this particular podcast. We started out on Skype, and for some reason, we just could not grab a good quality. So we ended up having to record this podcast over the phone, a three-way conversation. And toward the end of the podcast, I get completely cut out of the conversation for some reason. And so there's hit and misses throughout. We hope you will stick with it. There's some really good information. And we're going to have some follow-up podcasts as well, talking about greater technology. So hope you enjoy this podcast tonight with Chris Leslie and GreaterAncestors.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Digging for the Truth with Ark and Neo. This is episode number 20. And tonight we have a very special guest. We have Chris Leslie with us. And Chris has got a great website called GreaterAncestors.com. And this website, he has a lot of unusual stories and amazing artifacts about how humans, plants, and animals were all greater in ancient times, greater size, lived to greater ages, and were just overall greater in their structure. So how are you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing good.
And how are you tonight, Neo?
Doing great. Doing great, Art. Right. I mean, amazing podcast.
Yeah, I think so, too. We're happy to have you, Chris. And
Thank you.
We're also recording this on a phone tonight, so it may not be quite as good a quality, but I'll try to fix the quality as best I can for the podcast. So I guess just to start off, Chris, it's a really interesting background to get into something like this. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this.
I'm a theme park artist by trade, which means I sculpt large whales, full-size whales, sharks, pirate ships, that type of stuff. I've done some work for Ripley's, believe it or not, and the Spy Museum in Washington, D.C., and just a whole host of sculptural type stuff for different theme parks around the world.
That's awesome. Yeah, that was the other thing that was kind of an amazing coincidence is, you know, I've got a background as a special effects artist and sculptor myself, a creature designer. And so I don't do, you know, giant whales and sharks and stuff like that. At least I haven't. But it's kind of interesting. We both have a similar background in that type of regard. So do the sculptures you do you do those in like a styrofoam and then cover those with resin? Or is it do you do molds or is it just like a one-time type of thing?
I do a little bit of all that. Sometimes I work in fiberglass over top of styrofoam. Other times, you know, I will carve something, you know, in styrofoam and then, you know, either hard coat or soft coat. I use a material called Flexirock quite a bit. It's material made by a local designer, and it's kind of like stucco, but you could stucco a canvas and roll it up and then ship it, unroll it, and there's no cracks.
Oh, very cool. So it has a flexible type of property. Huh, neat. So I saw as well on your website there you have a lot of really cool castings and things you sell as well. What type of things do you have on your website that you sell?
Various animals and just artifacts, pretty much the same kind of stuff that I have in the museum.
One of them that might be especially interested to our listeners, I saw an elongated skull there, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, interested in that, the elongated skull. That's kind of a thing that Brian Forster does a lot of work in, and with the elongated skulls down in the Paracas area. He specifically tells me that some of those skulls, they have 7-foot, you know, skeletons. They've found that some of them have 7-foot skeletons. You always see them separated and wonder, you know, where are the bodies, but...
I know L.A. Marzulli does a lot of investigation into the elongated skulls as well, so that's really interesting.
Hey, this is Neo, and I've noticed that your fossil replicas are actually full size. I mean, these are gigantic. I mean, you've got a giant skull of a crocodile that's just the skull is like 6 feet long almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. There is a greater ancestor, what I call a greater ancestor, and I may be the only guy that's saying this, that every animal and plant has a greater ancestor. From single-celled organisms, they're slightly larger in the fossil record. You can Google giant fossil bacteria and see examples of that. And I even believe that blue whales have a greater ancestor. And I tell people all the time, give me 20 animals, and I'll find the greater ancestor for all of them.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. You were also, you know, it's not only the mammals, it's every type of living, you know, organism. Like you said, single cells, insects, plants, mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah, and you asked me how I got into this. And there was a guy named Greg McMurtry, and he was talking about the large animals, and he had showed some slides of various animals, large animals, and this is before, like, the movie Ice Age. I think the movie Ice Age, the cartoon, really educated people on some of these, because I was going around showing, you know, giant armadillos and giant sloths, and people weren't that much interested until the movie came out. But he showed a slide of an 18-inch cockroach. And at the time, I got to thinking, if, you know, this is something that I have, you know, would not know about if he hadn't showed this slide. And so I started digging, seeing if there was more of this kind of stuff. And, you know, it just made sense that if, you know, if one animal was that size and, you know, there were some scarce examples, that maybe I could make a good case. And I expected to find, like, maybe 8. And, you know, I'm into, like, 1,000 or something right now. But every time I go look for a new example, it ends up, you know, I end up finding it.
Now, I see that you not only have the, you know, you've got human skull, you've got Gigantopithecus, a lot, you know, some people believe that may be an answer to Bigfoot, but you've got another, you got a teratorn, which I believe is like a giant bird or vulture.
Yeah.
It's just humongous.
It's a like a California condor. I believe, the bird that it, you know, it is a California condor. It's just the greater ancestor of one. It's one of the large. I think there's a new one that has just beat it out recently. It's a Pelagornis. I think it's like a large pelican, and it's just slightly larger than that one.
Hmm. So is that the largest feathered bird that has ever been found? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And what kind of wingspan did that have?
Let me think about that. I got to think about it.
Because I see that the skull was 9, 10 inches just for the skull and the beak part of that you got in your store.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's just, that's scary. You know, something like that.
I want to say about 24 feet across. I think both of them are just slightly over 24 feet. So.
Yeah, we did a while back, did a podcast. We mentioned a guy named Pliny the Elder, and he mentioned huge winged birds like the roc.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm wondering if that may be a version, you know, the teratorn or teratonis, whatever. I'm not sure how to pronounce it exactly, of a roc, of what they used to call it. Maybe there was some still living, you know, in the last 1,000 years.
Yeah, you know, in Sinbad, I think it shows a giant, you know, the roc. I think that's where some of the tales come from. It's from some of those Arabian tales of the roc.
Oh, yeah.
One of the curious things that, you know, I haven't went public with this, but I think I'm real interested in it. I think that maybe some of the some babies have already been found of the roc. Not a fully adult. If it has, it's just been covered up. But there's several flightless birds that are really large, that have really short wings, and those are kind of curious to me. And I'm leaning more towards those of being like a baby rock. Just a smaller version of the adult.
Yeah.
And some of those are people, like 6 to 10 feet tall, I think, some of those.
Yeah, you know, you have the moa bird and the elephant bird, who I think just went extinct, 500-600 years ago, maybe 800 years ago. And apparently those creatures could, you know, in the story, would guys arm was off, and they were highly aggressive creatures as well.
Yeah, I just sculpted the largest penguin fossil, fleshed out and sculpted what it would look like in real life. They just recently found a giant penguin that is 6.5 feet tall.
Wow.
And the beak is almost, 2 feet long. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, there's a couple of other species that came before it. That were found previously that were 4.5 and 5'7", but last year I think this one just beat them all out.
That is amazing. Now, was this in was this found at an Arctic region, or was this found in a different part of the world? Because I know a lot of times they find these fossils in places that they don't necessarily live today.
It was off of Argentina, off of one of the islands, in, I believe, okay. In Argentina.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Wow, that's some amazing creatures. Now, we got a report of a we do the old newspaper site on Facebook, and one of the old stories that we came across there was that in the Patagonia region of South America, that there was some sightings of what they thought could have been giant sloths. Tell us a little bit about giant sloths.
The giant sloths, they're the largest examples are, possibly 30 feet tall. They've left footprints that are 3.5 feet wide, making the sloth about the size of a T-Rex.
Wow.
And let me see, today, a sloth claw is about 2.5 inches. The largest species in the fossil record is Megatherium americanum, and it averages about 20 feet in height.
Wow.
It weighs about the same as an African elephant, to give you some kind of scale of how big it was.
Wow. It's amazing.
And I've heard reports, of pelts found, large pelts that were still fresh that were found in caves from one that had lived recently. Is not sure where that documentation is right now, but I have it.
So
giant sloths were really weren't a docile creature, but they look pretty scary because, like you said, they've got those gigantic claws. But at least the ones today they kind of just sleep a lot, is what we know, is how we know them today. But what do you think, these giant ones were more, carnivorous or aggressive, or are they still kind of a slow-moving creature back then?
Well, the idea of greater ancestry is that everything is bigger, better, faster, stronger, and smarter in the past. So I would have to believe that, we're looking at, the sloth in its devolved state. And what greater ancestry is, it's a model of maturity, and it says that there's a decline in maturity, and that's why everything is getting smarter. For humans, in the future, we would look like, as an adult, what a teenager looks like today. So as we go into the past, we see, features of longevity and maturity. We see humans with, larger eyebrows and thicker bone structures, and they look more adult than Neanderthals. Now, they have a cubic capacity that exceeds our own, where we average about 14 to 1,600 cc's. You know, some of theirs go 2,200 and 2,400 cc's. So there's a big difference, you know, just in the academic, you know, not talking about, you know, what us giantologists, you know, are uncovering, but, you know, just going through the academic examples. I'll give you one really good example. It's my favorite. And it's Java Man. It's, you know, by Dubois. He found a skull cap and a femur bone. The first comment that he made public, he says that it was a giant chimpanzee. And yeah. I'm gonna stick to that. I believe that's what it is. And at some point I'm gonna get a replica of that and finish it out to be, you know, what he first claimed it to be. Mm. The femur bone is actually 4 inches longer than a human thigh bone. You know, on average, I think our average, you know, human thigh bone is 18 inches or something like that. And
I think that's about right. I was going to say 17 and 19.
Yeah, this is about 4 inches larger than that. So we're looking at a person, you know, getting close to 7 foot tall.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, that kind of follows, the logic you just pointed out kind of follows entropy, you know, that everything is tending towards chaos and,
yes.
you know, the original genetic code is slowly degrading. And, you know, we see that in animals, too. We see more genetic defects. We see isolated populations of animals that are having a harder time breeding because they don't have the genetic diversity that they need to keep going.
Yeah, not only does, you know, greater ancestry track, you know, from the fossil record to a living, you know, weaker descendant, but you can see it today. You know, just over a generation, there's reports of elephants losing their tusk. And, you know, the red deer is 1/6 smaller than it was, you know, previously and 20 years ago. And so there's all these reports, you know, that demonstrate it. It's observable. It's not just an interpretation from the fossil record.
Oh, yeah.
You know, from the evolutionary standpoint, what is the explanation from evolutionists for all these giant greater ancestors?
They're kind of thrown into a discard pile. Just by labeling them extinct, they don't have to deal with them.
Or not.
So like I said, they get rid of 98% of the fossil record just by attaching, you know, what I think is a mislabel to them. And here's another thing is that there's always a environmental type mechanism that's being used to, you know, account for the shrinkage in size. But, you know, one thing that I've noticed is that, you know, for the giant insects, the reason is always said to be oxygen, you know, is getting less. It was more back then, and it's getting less now. And with plants, they'll say that it's the carbon dioxide was higher content, and it's, you know, less now. Mm-hmm. And they'll say that, you know, for the mammals, it was a hotter environment or a colder environment. For the reptiles, it was a hotter environment. But this idea that, you know, there's these different situations and scenarios, the thing that strikes me is that, you know, Percoptodon goliath, a 14-foot-tall kangaroo, lived with Megalania, which is, you know, 40 to 50-foot Komodo dragon.
Wow.
So
yeah.
So they were both big. So was it hot? Was it cold? You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I believe you have to look into a genetic solution, because there's a common thread between all creatures that's making them all, you know, lose this maturity. And I haven't begun to answer what that is, but I'm pretty sure it's copy errors or is genetic and not environment.
Hmm. Yeah. You know, we did an interesting podcast on giant pumpkins.
Uh-huh.
And the reason we got into that was because I used to grow giant pumpkins. And what's interesting about the giant pumpkin is that it has actually gotten fairly large over the last 20 years.
Uh-huh.
But it only started getting bigger after they reconnected two varieties of pumpkins back together.
Oh,
so it kind of recombined some of the genetics. And it suddenly went from 200 pounds to 400 pounds the first generation.
Right.
And what these giant pumpkin guys have done over the last 20 years is they've just taken the biggest pumpkins at these competitions, traded seeds, and cross-pollinated large pumpkins together. So that last year, the record pumpkin was 2,300 pounds. And so we've kind of had that theory a little bit, too, that if you could recombine the genetic information that might be isolated by different subgroups, you could get these larger creatures, and that kind of falls along with what you're talking about too.
Absolutely. In genetics, they call that reversion, and I used to read a lot of stuff about genetics. I haven't done that recently, but they call that reversion, and that's when, you know, you take different groups that haven't been together for a long time and recombine them. What is that racehorse that's so famous, Seabiscuit or something? They combined two different breeds, and you know, they called the horse Big Red because it was such a large horse. And it was supposed to be a horse that is good for short distances and not good for long distance. Well, he happened to be good for both. And it was because they combined those different genetics that haven't been combined in a long time.
Hmm. Oh, wow. Now, you called that reversal?
Reversion.
Oh, reversion. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at it. That's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, when they lose this, let's say that you had those, you know, two different lines and one of them became extinct. They call that variation extinction. The geneticists do. They call that variation extinction. And what happens is once you lose that variation, you know, it's gone forever. You
yeah.
can't recombine, and then your species gets continually smaller.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me of something that I read in Pliny the Elder. He had those old bestiaries from a long time ago, but he had really accurate descriptions of a lot of creatures, and some amazing creatures that we never heard of. One of the creatures that he described there was a lion-like creature that he called a pard.
Uh-huh.
And he said a lion and a pard is what bred together to make the leopard. And I think the leopard is one of the creatures that is having a tough time genetically now, the leopard and the cheetah, because they have this variation, isolation happening with those groups.
Yeah, there's a certain number of horizontal variations. And that's a term that has been used by geneticists as well, horizontal variations. Like a dog has, you know, 450 different varieties, but a cheetah, you know, does not. I think there may be two varieties tops, and that's, you know, they're at the bottom end of the genetic pool.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So, yeah, I mean, if you think about the way that they have bred dogs just by isolating different attributes within different litters and then
mm-hmm.
combining those different attributes, that certain animals wouldn't have that flexibility, like a cheetah within their DNA. They wouldn't have that that genetic attribute to have that flexibility.
Yeah, so if you were to, you know, get rid of all the dog breeds except for, you know, a Chihuahua or something, you know, then that's what you got. You lose
yeah.
all those different varieties.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can't go back to the original kind after that unless you could find one of the original kind to breed it into.
And I've said before, you know, when, in some of my writings and stuff, I talk about variation is the outward expression of inward defects. So the idea is that, you know, every dog breeder has, you know, they know that a Cocker Spaniel has certain genetic problems that other dogs don't have. Chihuahuas have a whole host of, you know, things. German Shepherds, you know, their spine, they have always have spine problems, their lower back. But each one of them has, you know, like this signature for problems, genetic problems.
Sure.
You know, because they are a variation.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me tell you a little bit about the museum.
Yeah.
It's based on greater ancestry, an idea that everything's bigger, better, faster, stronger, and smarter in the past. And I you know, when I got into giants, most people are familiar with the work that I do with giant humans. But, you know, I came in from a different angle. I came with the, you know, first with the animals, but everybody kept asking me, well, what about humans? You know, if you're saying every animal's bigger, you know, in the past, what about humans? Aren't humans getting smaller? Aren't there doorways in Italy that are, you know, 5'4" and those type of things? And it's simply, you know, horse riders tend to be smaller, and they're jockeys. They had a large cavalry in Rome, and so, you know, a lot of the doorways that, you know, are being cited are for horsemen. And the other part is, you know, in that statement, everything is bigger, better, faster, stronger, and smarter. They say, well, no, humans aren't smarter in the past. We are smarter now. And so the third part, you know, and greater ancestry is like a three-legged stool. It's greater animals, greater humans, and greater technology. And technology is that third part.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a lot of items that you would see in Michael Cremo's book, Forbidden Archaeology. So, you know, if you come to the Greater Ancestors Museum, you could see some of those items as well. I have, you know, some dinosaur and human type evidence, and some evidences for the Nephilim, just archaeological evidences.
Very cool. What type of evidences do you have in the Nephilim categories?
One thing that I have, Vancouver, Canada, petroglyphs up there, and there was one in particular that I wanted to go up and replicate, and so I took, I think it was, you know, five trains and a ferry ride, and I called a perfect stranger up, and, you know, he gave me a car ride to the location, so like a scout. And when I got there, I'll tell you what it is. It's a humanoid. And it had some features that Jack Coazzo, he's a guy that, you know, studies, you know, these Neanderthal skulls and talks about, you know, these features of longevity. Uh-huh. But it has some of those characteristics, like the large eyebrows, the long nose, and long ears.
Hmm.
But it also has six fingers and six toes.
Oh, really?
And I call it the Nanemo Nephilim. And I have a web on my YouTube page. You can see a video on there of the trip, and so it's carved into stone.
Okay. Yeah, you know, that seems to be one of the more common stories attached to, you know, giants in some of the you know, stories of Indians and
yeah,
different ancient accounts, is the six fingers, six toes, and also the red hair. Have you found any connections to the red hair or albinism of any kind being associated to gigantism?
Yeah, you know, I have that same genetic trait, that red hair gene, MCR1 gene. And, you know, there's certain, they claim that it is near, it has something to do with the pituitary gland, which is the same gland that has to do with, you know, gigantism and acromegaly and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there is some connection, you know, to that. So,
yeah, that's kind of the, some of the things that I've noticed is these connections to the glands, not only the pituitary, mm-hmm. but also the pineal gland and the and melanin.
Yeah.
One of the things that are in some of these ancient accounts is these accounts of these, you know, light-skinned giants or Nordic-type giants, both in mythology and in, you know, real accounts. And you think, oh, what does, you know, light skin and giants have to do with anything? And then you look into, there's some people that claim the pineal gland is encapsulated by melanin crystals. And these melanin crystals actually take different shapes to send frequencies and receive frequencies through these different structured shapes that it takes, much like a crystal radio. So these melanin crystals are like a liquid that take different shapes in the pineal gland, that they actually create different frequencies and resonance, and they communicate that to the pituitary gland wirelessly. And they somehow communicate these glands, communicate in our bodies wirelessly, and that light and the light of the pre-flood world was somehow different. It may have some part in the gigantism as well, but I don't know.
Yeah. And many of the counts, you know, that could be considered to be a Nephilim. I believe they always talk about, you know, them crumbling to dust, you know, when exposed to air. I'm working on a book right now. The title is Giant Horse. That's the title. I figure that would be a good start, you know, for me. I can't seem to get credibility with people who already have books, and you may know that. But this book, Giant Horse, it's going to go through and cover some of the, you know, the Guinness Book World Record is a horse named Radar, and he's 19 hands tall. Hand is, you know, 4 inches. So he's 19 hands tall. That's the biggest horse today. But if you go back in the past, in the 19th century, you'll see some horses that are, you know, 21 hands tall. So I give several newspaper articles that talk about that. And then further back, you'll see that they are 1.5, 22.5, and even 23 going further back. So you can see this, you can see this decline in modern time. There's a species called Equus giganteus, which is a species that is about 10 to 13 feet tall, and that's much bigger.
I wonder if giants Oregon.
You're from Oregon. I think there's a horse from Oregon, one that was found that was a 20-footer. A newspaper article on that. Montana, Wyoming, and Texas, they all have 30-footers, horses that were 30 feet in height.
So one of these giants could ride a giant horse, and
absolutely. And man. So the book is going to have all that in the book.
Oh yeah, that is amazing. That is really neat.
Yeah, that is. You know, have you ever heard of the Heck cow that the Germans bred to try to bring back the original cow kind? And it was an enormous bull, and they call them the Nazi cows because they were not only much larger, but they were very, very aggressive, almost like a wild animal. You know, like you imagine, you know, taking a wolf in as a pet, you know, it's going to be, or a fox or something like that, it's going to be naturally more skittish and aggressive, and that's kind of how these cows were. And they were so aggressive that they actually had to kill a bunch of them because they were attacked people. So often.
That's exactly what I would expect to happen to. There's an animal called the Auroch, which is a giant bull. And I know there's some people out there that have done some work with the bulls from Egypt. It talks about There's texts that talk about them destroying temples via rocks, you know, that they were worshiping, destroying temples. And some of those large sarcophagi are supposed to be, you know, for those giant bulls.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep, I'd like to see more. I've been looking. I'd like to see more information on that.
Yeah, our dad actually has worked as a genetic engineer, works in the breeding of cattle for over about 40 years. And so it's kind of amazing how they can change cows, you know, over a period of 30 years. You know, they can have cows that give, you know, 6-8 times the milk production and are just, you know, just through the matching up different attributes of their missing traits.
Yeah, I've been talking with a guy, he is from college, and he told me that he has seen a skull that is 5 feet wide from eye socket to eye socket, and I'm skeptical about that, but I'm trying to track it down. I don't disbelieve it, because I've seen some, you know, amazing differences between the past to the present in the animal species. So,
sure.
One of my favorite is a little armadillo in, I think it's in Chile, but it's called a pink fairy armadillo, and it's about 3 to 5 inches. There's actually two species. One of them is 5 inches long. The other one's 3 inches long. And, you know, they're shaped weird. They're not like, they don't have a long tail like other armadillos. They just kind of stop. And so that they're a different variety, different species, and kind of like a mole. But the only thing that I can see in the fossil record from the same location is an armadillo that's called Peltophilus. And it has horns, and it's 20 feet in length, according to the fossils. And so that's probably the most dramatic example that I know of.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about a dragonfly with a 5-foot wingspan. Is there any other insects that are, that got human, you know, spiders or anything, scorpions that got immense?
Yeah, there's, I think the millipede is about 10 foot. The centipede is about 6 foot in the fossil record. The spider, Megarachne, I think there's other people who are trying to discredit that one, but there's, other than that, there are other spiders in the fossil record that are larger than today's. The orb spider has greater ancestor that's about the size of your hand.
Wow.
Megarachne is, you know, much, much bigger. Scorpion.
You don't see them as big as Shelob in Lord of the Rings.
No, no, not that big. It's kind of scary that you know you knew the name.
Yeah.
There are some scorpions that I've read about that were over 10 feet. 10 feet. Oh. So those are like, you know, Sinbad. Bronco scorpion anglicus is a species of giant scorpion. It's about 3 feet in length.
Wow. Now, is that a sea scorpion or is that a land walking scorpion?
It's a land walking scorpion.
Wow.
Yeah. There's also some giant whip scorpions about the same, about 10 feet as well.
Amazing.
I mean, this is just, you imagine a world with that many huge creatures walking around. I mean, people would have to be larger, too, to defend themselves and just not become food to everything.
Yeah. And I'm sure man was real, you know, was quicker, was more alert, more aggressive, you know, in the past. You know, I think that's just part of the package. I'm hoping, like, someone, you know, a game producer, like someone who makes, you know, World of Warcraft or something will contact me and we can build a video game, you know, based on what the world used to be like.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be awesome.
That would be amazing, yeah.
But after the museum, you know, I'm working on the museum, and it's free up until the time that I finish, you know, finish everything. It's been open for about a year and a half now, and it's still a work in progress. But the future goal is to do a theme park. I mean, that's what my expertise is in. And Walt Disney, he first came to Jacksonville, Florida, and he was run out of town. The city council told him that they don't cater to circus people, and so he moved to Orlando and bought land there. But I plan on, you know, hopefully opening up a theme park eventually, after the museum gets good and
there you
up
go.
And running.
You know Kent Hovind there in Florida, or that used to have Dr. Dino or Dinosaur Adventureland?
Yeah, he's in the Pensacola area. He's on the west side of Florida. I'm on the far east.
Ah, okay. Yeah, he did. We did an interview with him not too long ago, a couple interviews with mm-hmm. him. And, you know, I was telling him that I did sculpture work, and he's got plans once he gets out and back on his feet to do a whole bunch of giant dinosaur sculptures. So there would be a good network for you.
Yeah, his son, Eric Colvin, has been here twice.
He came
there once when I had just got this place and told him that I was going to open up a museum here. He came, and then later on, 1 year, almost, you know, exactly 1 year, he came back and to see the changes that had happened. So I'm hoping he'll come back again within a few months.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And tell us about the museum. You know, what are the hours, and what are some of the things that people can see?
The hours of it's open. It's open normally about 8 to 5. I'm not here all the time, but you know, I've opened it up on a Saturday or a Sunday. You know, people call ahead. I've had people come from out of state. You know, a lot of people come from out of state, and you know, other Giantologists and that type of. Of people who are interested. Inside the museum is in a 1,600 square foot bank vault. Inside the museum, you'll see giant animals. You can see the Gigantopithecus blacki skull. You see a replica of the Amelia Island skull, the one that has 3 rows of teeth. You can see some of the sculptures that I've replicated from Claude Donna, you know, like the native on the back of an elephant, a full-grown elephant. Also have posters here for sale. They're $10 each. I've had people come in and just buy every single one of them. I've had that happen twice.
You can
see parts, out-of-place artifacts. You can see evidences for flying machines. I have a new section on Spanish explorers. Just about all the Spanish explorers, they talk about, you know, giant humans, giant natives that they have found, you know, back in the 15th, 16th centuries. And I've done a lot of work on that. And I have two YouTube videos on explorers.
Yeah, did you say you had a skull with 3 rows of teeth?
Yeah, it's a replica, and it's based off of a Smithsonian annual, and it is about 30 feet from my location, or not 30 feet, 30 miles from my location.
This is a humanoid skull?
Yes, 3 rows of teeth.
Wow. That's amazing. I've never heard of that. That is amazing.
Yeah, the Amelia Island skull.
Amelia Island.
Just in this area where I'm at now, there's just everywhere, 4 miles in any direction, there's evidence for giants. Ponce de Leon, you know, was here at the Fountain of Youth. with the Temequan Indians that were 7 to 7.5 feet tall. Where I'm at right now was a native village of some of the Temequans, like a Temequan city where I'm at right now. So it was full of, you know, 7 footers.
Wow.
A little bit south down to Vero Beach, about 50 miles, there's texts that talk about a 12-footer Vero man.
Really?
12 feet tall, according to the article.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. Florida's got, you know, it's an amazing state. You know, I've seen these stories of the escaped snakes and reptiles in the southern part of Florida that are getting humongous, and they think that they might get a 30-footer for a sitter.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a rattlesnake that was about 9 foot that was found at the St. Augustine Mall not too long ago. 9 foot rattlesnake.
Wow.
I'm sculpting a large rattlesnake, finishing up my 6.5 foot penguin, and sculpting a large rattlesnake based off of a skull from Otis Wood. Otis Wood is, he's from Kentucky, but he's found a skull of a pit viper, which is, you know, a rattlesnake is a type of pit viper, but the skull is 10 7/8 inches long. That's just the skull.
Wow.
Whereas a normal, you know, rattlesnake is about 2.5 inches.
Yeah, that's probably ridiculous. 30 feet long or bigger. I don't know.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have no idea what the length is going to be on that one, but...
And those are very fat snakes, too. I mean, that could, the weight on something like that with that big of a head could be immense. You know, a lot bigger than the pythons.
Yeah, almost 11 inches on the head of that snake.
Wow.
Hmm.
Now, what about some of the animals that are sighted that are considered cryptids? You know, you have animals like Mokiri Momimbe, you got the Ropin, you got these other creatures. What do you think about those type of creatures?
A lot of the cryptozoology type stuff. I haven't dug into that very much. I guess maybe, you know, a lot like the Nephilim, it you know, doesn't necessarily have to do with greater ancestry. But I feel like, you know, I guess the Nephilim is what interests me. And so
yeah.
I do some research on that. Not a lot. I'm not, you know, like some of the others, Fritz Zimmerman and, you know, some of the others that, you know, they found a 7-foot skeleton. And, you know, in their mind, it might be Nephilim. In mine, it's not.
Yeah.
Sure.
Now, you know, the Sci-Fi Channel has these giant, you know, the Megalodon shark, and these are, so those are real creatures. Mm-hmm. You know, how big did this Megalodon really get? I mean, what was the size of that shark?
Always tell people, you know, the is 25-foot great white. You know, that's what Jaws was from the movies, the 25-foot great white. I have here at the museum a replica of the Megamall tooth. There's several tooths, the Vito Bertucci tooth. You know, these are all Carcharodon, Megalodon. They're about 7.25, but, you know, inches from the tip to the side point. But
wow.
The Megamall tooth is 7 5/8. It's the largest tooth, you know, it's not the largest tooth recorded, but it's the largest tooth known. There's actually some in some of the old newspaper articles that are bigger than that. The shark from the Megamall tooth was probably 120 foot compared to, you know, the 25-foot jaw.
So it could eat Jaws.
Yeah, in one bite.
I had one question, if you had any info, because I was fascinated about the grapes of Eshcol. You know, when they went into the promised land, these these huge grapes that I've had a real hard time finding information about those. So if you had any other information on the grapes of Eshkol, that would be amazing.
I think I do have some image files that are not, you know, they're not up anywhere. I know that Rob Baxter, Calm Crash, has, you know, done some extensive work on those. And he's probably the best source. I've seen him post quite a bit of stuff on specifically that.
Well, that's pretty amazing, because I've always wondered about those and how they got so big. Or, you know, if the grapes themselves were, you know, the size of, tennis balls or volleyballs, or, you know, or they just, just tons of regular-sized grapes.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess that they were larger back then. You know, overall, I guess, you know, they're just smaller today, you know, about everything else. The plants, you know, we think today that the tree is, you know, it's the largest tree that ever existed. But there's a lot of trees that, you know, equal in size in the past, according to the fossil record. In South Florida, there's a whole area of these dwarf oaks, and they're oak trees, but they top out at about 9 feet tall.
Yeah.
And they're just on the low end of the gene pool. But there's evidences of plum trees that are 90 feet tall, cattails that are 100 feet tall. I've got an actual fossil from a horserush, which is a type of reed, and it was over 100 feet tall. It barely gets, you know, two and a half feet maximum. This thing's a big upper arm. And, you know, redwood trees, I think 896 tall, whereas they top out at 350 today. You know, we're talking like close to the Woolworth Building in, you know.
Oh yeah.
New York.
Wow, that's amazing. Now I have one other question too that you might be answered. You know, there's a lot of mythology about chimeras. About creatures that are, you know, combinations of several creatures. Is there any, you know, fossil things that are like minotaurs, centaurs, you know, things that could be considered creatures that are, have, you know, two types of creatures combined together? You know, I don't know if that's a natural thing, or is there any fossil record of any of these type creatures, or if they're just in legends at this point?
Well, when we were talking about the Nephilim, one of the things that amazed me is, you know, this idea that, you know, there are people, chimeras today, people that have two sets of genes. And usually, you know, different blood types will, you know, cause a bad outcome. But you can Google it and, you know, look up chimeras, and there's people that have parts of their body that are even different races, you know, in one person. There's people that have done blood samples, and, you know, in part of their body, it would be the genetic code of their father, and then they have their own as well. And I'm, you know, this totally blows my mind that this is even possible. But I've looked to the Egyptian Book of the Dead, and it is all about chimeras. You look to the Egyptian Book of the Dead, and they have a chimera, you know, he's part crocodile, part leopard, part hippopotamus. And then they have these balancing scales. But you'll notice all these vases that are on, well, also on the same imagery. They're the same color as the chimera. And it's broken up. You can see you know, half of one of the jars would be green, which would indicate half crocodile. You know, to me, as an artist, you know, I notice colors, but I believe it's a color code, you know, type of map for making chimeras.
That's very interesting.
The Nephilim, I believe, is a chimera. You know, I think Scripture talks about oil and water not mixing, and it talks about iron and clay, you know, can't combine. And I believe that's the case of the Nephilim, that they are chimera. You know, no one ever questions why almost all of them are male, you know, from all these stories. Why are they all male? I'm pretty sure that they're hermaphrodites. Hermaphrodites are kind of, you know, they have both sex organs and, you know, kind of angels. So, you know, that kind of lends itself to. It would also explain double rows of teeth.
Yeah.
You know, this type of stuff, horns and, you know, various, you know, different odd thing, six fingers as well.
Yeah, the polydactyl thing, double rows of teeth. Yeah, these different genetics they don't see normally, an indication that there is some, you know, we call it either DNA or blood or whatever you want to call it, but that's very interesting.
Yeah, I've done some write-ups on the Nephilim in the past, and one of the things that are, you know, what I consider origin for them is I believe that they are, you know, from an angel, and then breeding a female from Cain's lineage. And there's a specific reason for, you know, why they would pick Cain's lineage, and that's to get the blessing and the curse. In Scripture, it says that anybody that goes out and seeks to kill Cain would receive the curse, you know, seven times. And so I believe that that was a tactical advantage, and that they would go out and seek. If you notice in Genesis 6:4, it says that they took all whom were fair. There's a lot of people that believe Cain's lineage, you know, were redhead. I believe that they were specifically targeting Cain's lineage, which, you know, it's probably part of the reason why they, you know, they were getting larger. If red hair has something to do with the, you know, the pituitary gland. I've seen some of the stuff that you posted and found some articles, you know, on that subject where it talks about them in some of the old newspaper archives.
Yeah, that is. What you should do is maybe schedule another podcast on greater technology. Get some dig into that, because I think we're almost out of time. We'll be going for a while, this has been amazing podcast. I'll tell you what, this has been great to just hear about these fantastic creatures, and I'd love to have a museum now. I want to go to Jacksonville and check that out. And my father, I used to live in Orlando, but he moved to Oregon, so otherwise I would have been, you know, at least fairly close to you, a few hours away. But so I might have to make a trip, you know, one of these days to check out that museum. I think that would just be amazing.
Yeah, I'm going to check and see what's up in Oregon. If I'm not mistaken, I do remember a police station up there that might have a giant human footprint that I met. Might some road agents. Maybe make a cast or something.
Yeah, that'd be cool. We'd like to check that out. We got several people that are from Oregon that are, you know, for the research team and really into things like we are too. I appreciate it, Chris. I mean, it's great. I'm glad we were able to find connected, and I think it turned out great. And we'll try to make it work you know, some video as well in the future.
Okay.
And we could show some things like that. Maybe even you see you have a YouTube video that shows some of your stuff as well.
I have several YouTube videos, but I don't have like a virtual museum. I'm kind of worried about, you know, kind of showing my cards. So. There is one on there that actually goes through the museum and shows, you know, a new project that I'm working on, but I keep everything else hidden.
Yeah. I know it's the vault. That's kind of a cool setup you got there, the vault. I mean, a picture at the beginning, it was just amazing with that, you know, had a giant, you know, concrete walls and huge metal locks there. You have a neat setup, so.
Yeah. Bomb hits Jacksonville, the Great Ancestors World Museum is the only thing that survives.
Yeah, that's right. Well, great. Yeah, we're, you know, me and Ark have been the replica we've been trying to make. We wanted to make two different replicas. We wanted to make a replica of a spearhead, which was, you know, in the 15-20 pound range, and then we wanted to make possibly a Goliath skull that was just, you know, proportional to what to the size that we think he may have been, and show people.
Did you see my article that I wrote on Goliath?
No.
It goes through and
it is it on your website?
It follows the Hebrew cubit instead of the Roman or common cubit.
Okay. Yeah. You know, a lot of people say it's 18 inches, and then they've got the, you know, the 20.5 inch, the 21.5 for the Egyptian. So it's in your website then?
It's actually on my Facebook, and it's in one of my notes. I don't know if you've been to my notes area, but there's
I'll check it out.
There's a ton of stuff in the notes area.
I'll check it out.
All
right. Hey, have a good one. And hey, thanks again, Chris. We'll see you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. Okay. All right. Thank you for tuning in tonight, everybody. I really apologize for that sound quality with tonight's podcast. We're recording everything over a phone, and so we just didn't get the quality we usually have. Next time, we're going to make sure we get a recording from each person at their location, and then I will edit it together in the end. So be sure and check out Chris Leslie's website at greaterancestors.com. He's got some really amazing things there. Lots more to come on that. Hopefully we're going to have another follow-up podcast with him talking about greater technology. And so that should be really interesting. We got a lot of music in the works. Hove Indication, some songs on transhumanism. Working on a fourth album for Destiny Lab. If you want to hear more on Destiny Lab, you can go to destinylab.com. If you have any questions, comments for future podcasts, you can hit us up at destinylab@gmail.com. Be sure and check out our Facebook page for Digging for the Truth with Ark and Neo and our old newspaper stories. Be sure and hit that up. It's a great place to hang out. Lots of cool stories that we haven't discussed and a lot more coming on that soon. So tonight we're going to close out with a song called The Evidence by Destiny Lab. This song talks about all the wild creatures, animals that God has created for us to observe and learn from. We hope you enjoy it. Until next time, good night and God bless. Sharp as knives.
as a tool to confuse. The eyes of eagles are not like people's. They see so clear, they spot mines and fields. And the bats you sold are to track and locate and snatch up Mars like coins at arcades. The tricks and the trades of the animal kingdom. We can learn so much when we start to see them. Design and structure, reform and function. The whole creation put in place by someone. All these natural wonders and hidden clues. Many facts to ponder in the life we choose. This is the evidence.